You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hi, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Here at a small, tidy kitchen in a converted garage just south of downtown LA, something unexpected is on the menu. A dehydrator, you know, the kind you'd use to make dried apricots. It sits on a shiny steel table. It's a big white box containing five black trays, all stacked on top of one another. Valerie Rosas pulls out one of the trays, which holds, what is that? Is that beef jerky?
I'm breaking apart dried pieces of placenta into smaller pieces of placenta to go into the food processor so that I can pulverize it into a fine powder.
Nope, definitely not beef jerky. And Valerie Rosas is grinding it up and pouring it into vitamin capsules so it can be eaten by a woman who delivered a baby and this very same placenta just yesterday. This is Rosas' job. She runs a placenta encapsulation business. Well, these days, placenta consumption is on the rise, a resource for new and expecting moms alongside lactation consultants, doulas, and midwives. A handful of celebrities, including Kim Kardashian and January Jones, have recently talked about eating their placenta, taking it from the fringe to the trendy. Yeah, I get it. Perhaps you have questions. Who? What? Why? How safe? Reporter Stephen Jackson has been there, done that, and he's here now with some answers.
After my wife got pregnant last summer, we hired a doula to help us with the birth of our first child, and she told us about Valerie Rosas. For just under $400, she collects your baby's placenta from the hospital in a cooler, then returns it in capsule form a day or two later. Plus, you get the umbilical cord bent into the shape of a heart. We did it for the same reason lots of moms are doing it these days.
So I would say the number one reason why moms are choosing to have placenta encapsulated is to help prevent any postpartum depression. Moms are scared of it, like straight up.
Before we go on, let's lay a few things out on the table. The placenta is an organ that develops and attaches to the wall of the uterus during pregnancy. It delivers nutrients and oxygen to your baby while removing waste from their bloodstream. After the baby is born, mom delivers the placenta too. Consuming the placenta is practically universal among land mammals, except for, generally speaking, us. Well, some did it hundreds of years ago in China, and then in the 1970s, Rolling Stone magazine wrote about it. Now, though, the practice is on the rise. In fact, Rosas has encapsulated over 2,200 placentas here in Los Angeles since she started the Feel Good Company, her encapsulation business, 9 years ago. She works mainly with moms at Cedars-Sinai and at hospitals in Santa Monica.
So the main demographic is Caucasian and Asian mamas. Although I have recently, within the last year and a half, have seen more Latin families and African American families, which I am very pleasantly surprised because I always wonder, like, how can this become something that's like more diverse?
Not everyone jumps on board right away. I mean, whoever's in the delivery room with mom has to collect the placenta, put it on ice, and walk out to Rosas in the front of the hospital. A very hands-on process. Here's Paul Aguilar, a client of Valerie Rosas and father of two living in Simi Valley.
And then I went to my wife and we're with our new baby and this and that. And then after a few minutes, she's like, is the placenta secured? I'm like, dude, it looks like a piece of carne asada. Like, I feel like I'm going to throw it on the grill.
Let's hope he cleans the Weber before 4th of July.
I do offer some specialty placenta items. One of the more popular ones is going to be the raw placenta smoothie.
Oh, yeah. It's not just capsules you swallow. If you want, she makes smoothies too. Maybe to you, this all sounds like a bit much. Not me, though. For whatever reason, none of it makes me the least bit queasy. I even liked carrying the organ in an igloo cooler out to Rosas at the hospital. Sort of felt like one of those armored truck guys for a second. And for the record, Paul Aguilar came around when he saw a big difference in his wife's postpartum experience compared to the birth of their first child. Here's how Rosas describes some of the benefits.
Number one is going to be energy. by far, especially with the raw method of encapsulation. Number two will be hormone stabilization, mood stabilization. There's also lactation benefit. Placenta helps stimulate the mammary glands to help establish a good milk supply.
Okay, but is it safe? Well, placenta encapsulation remains an unregulated practice, and it did come under scrutiny in 2017 when the CDC issued a warning after a newborn developed group B strep when a mom ate placenta capsules infected with the bacteria. Rosa says before that,
I was encapsulating 30 to 40 placentas a month. After the CDC article, it went down to 10 placentas a month. And then from there, it just kind of took a little downward dip, but now it's back on the rise.
The strep B case appears to be an anomaly, but placental contamination and infection in general are risks, along with potential complications from increased estrogen levels. Sounds like it's time for a scientist. And yes, there is an expert on the matter.
My name is Daniel Beneshek. I'm a medical anthropologist and professor at the University of Nevada in Las Vegas.
Dr. Beneshek has spent the past 10 years studying maternal placentophagy. That's what you call it when you talk to a scientist. And he believes it's more or less harmless after looking at thousands of medical records. This was encouraging, as my wife had been taking a handful of these capsules every day for like 2 months. I wanted to know if his research revealed any measurable benefits.
Most individuals that have practiced placentophagy report very positive effects, and they say they'd do it again. I think we've learned that it's relatively safe, as it is typically practiced, that it's motivated by very common difficulties that many postpartum individuals face.
Dr. Beneshek's own surveys found moms who were glad they did it. Yet, the results of two different clinical trials did not reveal increased levels of iron or improved mood in the placenta groups, although slight elevations in hormones were detected. However, Dr. Beneshek isn't writing the practice off as hocus pocus. He points to small sample sizes in his clinical trial and says that steaming or even dehydrating a placenta could tamper with its efficacy. Rosas told me that she's upfront with her clients about the possibility that they may feel no effects from the pills at all. But still, people swear by them.
My whole experience with Val was great.
That's Rachel Martino, wife of Paul Aguilar, the grill master we heard from earlier. Martino skipped the placenta with the first kid and tried the capsules with her second.
The first time around, I feel like I wasn't depressed fully, but I definitely had the blues. I was crying all the time. This time around, totally different experience. Didn't have the baby blues, didn't have the crying spell. Just, it's such a different experience.
For what it's worth, my wife's post-birth experience was pretty similar. While she didn't feel any zings of energy, she never came close to anything that looked like the baby blues or postpartum depression.
Our society has made it to be like this is supposed to be the best time of your life, having a baby. And so if you're not having the best time of your life, then something's wrong with you. So women just really, or birthing people, really just want to have the best experience possible.
I wanted to see what all the fuss was about. So I took two capsules before I went surfing one morning. I have to say, I did feel a noticeable pep in my step, like I took a triple shot of espresso. And my wife said I seemed pretty amped up when I got home. Was it the placenta? A great morning in the water? Or just a general high from the rush of being a new dad? Hard to say. But between all the extra work and complying with the ever-changing demands of a newborn, I'll take it. For KCRW, I'm Stephen Jackson.
All right, straight ahead. Could a Manson family member be paroled? One of the people who murdered actress Sharon Tate, the LaBiancas and Los Feliz and others here in L.A. could go free after decades in prison. That's yours on the other side of this.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
It's Greater LA from KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis, and on to some LA history that's back in the news. Up in Benedict Canyon on August 9th, 1969, several members of the Charles Manson family murdered actress Sharon Tate and four other people. A jury found Patricia Krenwinkel guilty. She's been serving a prison sentence since 1971. The 74-year-old Krenwinkel is the longest-serving female inmate in the state. Now, a panel here in California recently recommended for her parole. The decision will now be reviewed before it heads to Governor Gavin Newsom's desk. Lori Levinson is a professor of criminal law at Loyola Law School and a former assistant U.S. attorney. Hi, Lori.
Good to talk to you, Steve.
Krenwinkel has been up for parole before, but this is the first time that she's ever been recommended for it. What's changed and why now?
That's right. She's been denied parole by the board 14 times before. But we are in a new era where our parole board is supposed to take a look at how old the defendant was when she committed the crime. And she was on the younger side, 19. And then how long she's been in prison and whether she's the same person who committed this horrendous crime. Given how long she's been in prison, she's credibly arguing, I'm a different person and therefore I should be eligible for parole.
You say different rules. I mean, what has changed? Like, is this a proposition that passed? Is it the way the state looks at paroles now?
Indeed. In California, we had changes on how the parole board works since 2017 and after, where the idea was is that we had been keeping people in parole, especially lifers, far longer than they needed to be. And in fact, there's been a difference in how the district attorney approaches parole. They used to show up for every parole hearing and oppose it. And George Gascon, the LA district attorney, didn't show up at all for this parole hearing.
Someone who did show up was Deborah Tate, who is Sharon Tate's sister, who has represented the family at these parole board hearings. What is she saying about this recommendation?
Well, for the families, their thought is that none of the Manson followers should ever be paroled. That it doesn't matter how long ago it was such a horrendous, scarring crime that these people are always going to be dangerous. And therefore, even though she hasn't caused trouble in prison, she was originally given the death penalty, Krenwinkel, and she should die in prison.
So is this, obviously there's a whole process, as I mentioned, it's got to go to the, you know, to get reviewed and also the governor looks at it. I mean, is this just a tentative decision and when will we know?
Well, this is the recommendation, and just a tentative one, in fact, by the parole board. They have 120 days for their legal department to review this recommendation, and they might back off from it. And after that, it has to go to the governor, and then the governor has, I believe, 60 days to decide. And we've had prior high-profile cases like Sirhan, where the board recently recommended that he be paroled, but the Kennedy family stepped in and the governor said no. So that the mere fact that there's been a recommendation, although it is new, doesn't necessarily mean that there will be a parole.
We've also obviously seen Leslie Van Houten, another member of the Manson family, who was recommended for parole, right? And she has been recommended for parole before, but then the governor steps in and says no.
Absolutely. There haven't been any of the Manson family members paroled, and Leslie Van Houten is really one of the prime examples. She had a lot of support for her parole. Her crimes were horrible, but the ones that are being held against Krenwinkel are truly horrendous. I mean, she's somebody who stabbed the victim in the stomach with a fork and then with blood painted the helter-skelter or death to the pigs. So in comparison, Krenwinkel probably doesn't even have the stronger case. And Van Houten didn't get out because the governor said no.
And the governor is up for re-election this year, too, right? So that there's that as well that he's got to think about.
Well, I think the governor thinks about all these things. Frankly, this is a governor who has favored some types of reforms, even parole reforms. But you have to put these cases involving the Manson followers in a totally separate category. Don't follow the general rules. Even though we generally think people in their 70s don't belong in prison, nobody's ever going to forget the nature of these crimes.
It's certainly in L.A. history for sure. Lori Levinson, professor of criminal law at Loyola Law School and a former assistant U.S. attorney. Lori, as always, thanks.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Onward now with Greater L.A. on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. It was one of those only in L.A. moments as people filled the stands, eager for a recent Angel City women's soccer match to start. A group of mariachis walked onto the field at Bank of California Stadium and performed the United States national anthem. But this group of mariachis is a tad different from your average mariachis, which L.A. is definitely not short on. They are the first LGBTQ plus mariachi group in the world. Mariachi Arco Iris. This being Pride Month, their proverbial cup runneth over at the moment in L.A. But they are always busy. And the founder and director, Carlos Samaniego, is here to talk about the group. Carlos, welcome to you.
Thank you so much for having me, Steve.
It's an honor. I should probably say first off that it was so cool to see you guys and your group play the anthem the other night. Was that one of the bigger crowds that you've played for?
Yes, I think it is. In fact, we weren't sure how big the crowd was, and we were told after the fact that it was something over 16,000 people. It was amazing.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, the question is, how did this come about? I understand you started it briefly in college, and then you revived your group a few years ago. What was the impetus for that?
After the college try that didn't work very well, I continued to work with several professional mariachi groups in Southern California and in New York. And as an openly gay man, I encountered bullying and discrimination. And, you know, our mariachi world and our Mexican culture is very machista, and I've come to terms with the English translation being toxic masculinity. I felt the need, a personal need, for there to be a safe space for mariachi musicians like myself so that we can come together and rehearse our music, perform our music in a space or an environment that's free of that bullying and the discrimination.
Where do you think that, as you call it, machista comes from?
Oh, that's something that's embedded, you know, in our culture, like I said, in Mexican culture and Latino culture and really just culture in general, right, around the world. It doesn't have to be Latin American. This idea that only manly men can perform this music or sing this music. These songs traditionally over the decades that mariachi has existed have, you know, made men the heroes or the victims. And there are songs that talk about a man falling in love with several women and which one should he choose. And it's just, it's embedded, like I said, in our culture. And so, you know, unfortunately, being openly gay is a no-no in this culture and this community. And so nowadays it's better. But when I was younger, it definitely was something that I struggled with.
And what about the people who are, you know, a part of your group? Are they've encountered the same things?
Some yes and some no. You know, a lot of them are younger. They're younger millennials or Gen Zers who, you know, this may be their first professional mariachi that they play in. Maybe they played in student groups before, and because a lot of schools here in Los Angeles have a mariachi program. So they don't encounter that type of discrimination because of the generation that they're from. And so luckily they can make like this easy transition into our group, and they may never have to live through that type of negative environment that I had to live through, which is fantastic, right? If I can offer them that kind of safety. And there are others that did encounter such things, and so they're happy to be here and they can be themselves authentically.
You still, though, have to sort of walk this fine line, right, that you represent not only the LGBTQ plus community, right, but you also represent the Mexican community as well. Can you speak to that? I mean, is that difficult?
At times, honestly, you know, the younger generation, like I said, these millennials and Gen Zers that are straight, they'll hire us for their what you would consider traditional wedding, you know. And here comes this queer mariachi showing up to this wedding where a lot of the family members and guests are from different parts of Mexico, let's say, and they don't know what to expect when they see us. And then all of a sudden we start performing and we can perform traditional mariachi music and well. And so they're not expecting that. So we do have to make sure that we're representing our Mexican culture and folk music to the highest degree. On the flip side, when we perform for LGBT events or organizations, they'll book Mariachi Arcoiris. And it's really great because, you know, perhaps before Mariachi Arcoiris, they would have never considered hiring a mariachi. But now we exist and they'll hire us. And we get this opportunity to show them what beautiful mariachi music sounds like. And even though they may be from Southern California and they have an idea of what mariachi is, they may not know what a big group sounds like and what beautiful arrangements we have to offer. So we have that opportunity and it's fantastic.
Because it is about the music, obviously. And apparently in those circumstances, you do things your way, which is one of the which is one of the songs that I want to play right now as an example of how y'all sound.
Is near, and so I face the final curtain. My friends, I'll say it clear, I'll state my case, of which I'm certain.
So that is Carlos channeling a little Frank Sinatra as well.
Yes. Yeah, and that song is really important to us as a group as well. Lots of times I end up dedicating that song as I'm about to start singing it to, you know, members of the LGBT community that are victim to HIV and AIDS, and we dedicate it to them. Yeah.
This weekend, you're playing at the Broad Museum's Pride event downtown LA, along with a lot of other LGBTQ plus musicians and poets. You've spoken about not feeling before early on accepted in the mariachi community. And here you are playing the national anthem, as I mentioned, for Angel City, being invited to play at, you know, one of the prominent museums in LA. I mean, how does that make you feel?
It's an incredible feeling to be able to show the city and the world that we exist and that we're not afraid to express who we are and still perform traditional music at the same time. It's beautiful.
You guys are incredibly talented. I want to thank you for coming on. Carlos Samaniego, director of Mariachi Arcoiris, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you so much for having us. It's been amazing.
You can catch Mariachi Arcoiris in action this Saturday night over at the Broad Summer Happening. More information at our website, kcrw.com/GLA. And that's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, the Black Lives Matter movement goes on, except now it includes things like yoga and meditation. You can check us out online at kcrw.com/GLA. Share your thoughts and subscribe to the podcast, kcrw.com/GLA. And, of course, you can get your podcasts, well, wherever you get your podcasts. Just check out Greater LA KCRW. Hope you'll join us there. Jenna Cagle, Juliana Mayo, Sonia Geis, Phil Richards, PJ Shahamat, Ray Guarna, Amy Ta, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordahl all made this evening's show happen. I'm Steve Chitakis. Have a great night.